Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Dotter 5 and this is WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is July 11th, 2018, 7 p.m. If you're not listening to at that date and time, then you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast, and you're lucky to have found it. The Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is on every Wednesday at 7 o'clock on WOZO Radio, so be sure to tune in. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstitions. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in East Tennessee, then you're just wrong. There are several atheists, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling you how you can connect with them in just a little bit. Also, did you know that there's an atheist call-in TV show broadcasting here in Knoxville, and has been for over 8 years? That's right, and we'll talk about that too. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are lots of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on this station as they are in rotation. If you'd like to call in and talk to us, hold a dialogue with an atheist, call in at 865-333-5937. That's the local number, 333-5937 in Knoxville. My usual co-host, a wombat, won't be here for another 10 minutes or so, won't be online, won't be able to call in until then, and he's going to bring a guest with him, so we'll have three on this end of the phone calls this week. So I'm going to go ahead and get the announcements out of the way. If you listen to a podcast, fast forward about 5 seconds, well, 5 minutes, and you'll be ready to go. The free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville, we mentioned a little earlier, but we'll start naming them and telling you how you can get in touch with them. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our, 16th year now. ASK has over 850 members now, and you can find us online at knoxvilleatheist.org. Or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. Heck, you can just go to Google and type in Knoxville Atheists and you'll find us. But if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one, start one. I started this one 16 years ago and it's grown way out of proportion to what I thought it would be. 850 members now. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday at Black Horse Pub on Kingston Pike near UT or near the Bearden area. We meet for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone's welcome as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. But you're all people are welcome, and we guarantee good conversation, so come on down. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. You may have seen their billboards up on Kingston Pike and in Loudon, I believe it was a couple years ago, where it says, if you don't believe in God, you're not alone, and you are not. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions with down on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building in that cafeteria annex. But if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. There's also an assembly called the Sunday Assembly. It started in England a few years ago and now has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month, though, here in Knoxville, locally, and that's on the fourth Sunday of every month. Go to the International Building down by the World's Fair site at the usual church time, about 10:30, and you'll be able to find them. Then there's a Secular Student Alliance, which, as you would think, has kind of taken a break for the summer since school's out, but they'll be back loud and strong when school starts back. They have programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school student or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Finally, I would like to talk about the Atheist Call-In TV show we mentioned a little bit earlier. Matter of fact, if you switch over to Comcast Channel 12 right now, you'd find it on the air. It's called Free Thought Forum. It's from 6:30 to 7:30 every Wednesday night. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. If you don't have a TV, you don't have cable, just go to your iPhone, pull up ctvknox.org, and hit the play button. You can also find archives of some of those TV shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in becoming involved and active on the TV show or this radio show, just come to an Ask Meetup or RET meeting, and you can talk to us about it and get involved. You could be our next co-host or guest. And again, the telephone number here, if you'd like to call in and talk to us, is 865-333-5937. One of the things I like to do when I have a little bit of time while I'm waiting for, like, Wombat to come on is talk about what is an atheist. A lot of people think that atheists and agnostics are mutually exclusive. They're not. Let me bring it up here. I wrote an article that's on my digitalfreethought.com website. Just go to digitalfreethought.com. Click on the blog button, and you can read all of these articles here. And this one's entitled, What Exactly is an Atheist and What is an Agnostic? One of the most common questions we receive on this TV show or the radio show is that what it is. What is an atheist? Most people mistakenly think that atheism and agnosticism is mutually exclusive, that agnosticism is a halfway house between believer and non-believer. That is, if you're not sure whether you believe in God or not, you're an agnostic. That's not the case. Agnosticism and Gnosticism don't address beliefs. It addresses knowledge or perceived knowledge or stated or claimed knowledge. Simply put, theism speaks to belief. Gnosticism speaks to knowledge. Theists believe in a God. Atheists don't. Gnostics claim to have knowledge of God. Agnostics don't. You can be both at the same time. Personally, I'm an agnostic atheist, and most atheists are. We don't know for certain that there are no gods. We don't claim knowledge that there are no gods out there of any kind anywhere in the universe or in some other universe. However, we don't believe in any. There are hard agnostics. There are people who claim to know that there's no gods and can prove it through logical argument. There are soft agnostics, atheists, who claim they don't know and indeed can't know and can't prove it, but they still don't believe in a God. So you can be an atheist and not know, and not claim to know, or claim to know. It's just, if you claim to know, you better have some proof ready or some evidence ready, because if you make a claim, you shoulder the burden of proof. You have to defend the claim. Personally, I don't make the claim that there are no gods. I just say that I don't know that there is any gods. Now, when I say I don't believe it, there's nothing to defend, because that's a personal statement about my own belief system, my own belief state. I don't believe in gods. So I'm an agnostic atheist. Hope that cleared it up. However, if you look up atheist in some certain dictionaries, you might encounter phrases like, one who denies the existence of God, implying that they are in denial of reality, or an infidel or non-believer, immoral or evil. After all, even dictionary compilers are human and subject to the same biases as regular authors. Good examples of this can be found in older versions of Webster Dictionary. Webster was a Christian, a theist, and obviously had an axe to grind against atheists. Since we have a little bit of time, I'm going to play a song. This particular song is by Anthony David. It's an atheist song, and it's called God Said. And we'll be back in just a few.
Christy, something happened a long time ago in Haiti, and people may not want to talk about it. They were under the heel of the French, and they got together and swore a pact to the devil. They said, we will serve you if you'll get us free from the French. Mm. True story. And so the devil said, okay, it's a deal. Ever since, they have been cursed.
Come shake the hand of my imaginary friend. See the trouble he gets in can't be traced back to me. Oh, he can pretend at the slightest of his whim. He has the power to suspend all rules of morality. And when he gets angry, he can make the lightning strike. He can help me win the fight with his power. Yes, he speaks to me, and it's always positive, 'cause I can just ask for forgiveness and it's over. So you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said.
Appropriate to say something like that, or
I'm not saying anything. What I'm doing is repeating what God is saying.
In the name of the one who made us all, I will hide behind these walls from my enemies.
We have our co-host and his guest on the line. Don't want to keep them waiting. So if you want to finish hearing the rest of that song, go to YouTube and look up Anthony David. And the song is God Said. And it's a good one, so give it a try. Wombat, welcome to the show. Can you hear me?
Welcome, I'm the Wombat!
Hey!
How's everybody doing? It's a brand new week, and I'm glad to be on the show. Today's going to be a special one. I got my friend, Calamity Cannon! Straight out of
Hello.
Hello, and welcome to the show.
So, just as a brief introduction, Dan and myself do a practice called Street Epistemology, which is about talking to people about the beliefs, getting their chance to think about it. And what I really like to do is just, give Gannon a chance to, introduce himself to our listeners and explain what he's all about. Gannon, what is yours? How do you feel?
Go for it.
So, my name's Gannon. I do street epistemology, as Ty just said. The thing that has to do with atheism that I sort of have a habit of saying is that it's a general outcropping of skepticism and critical thinking. And so it's not really a group identity that I belong to, but I appreciate the fact that there is such a thing as an atheist community, because it gives us something to talk about, I guess, in that realm of discussion. So it's,
And I, I share that sentiment. I feel like, you know, the only thing that connects atheists together is the fact that, you know, we agree on one question. And that kind of puts us in a lot of different areas in terms of, like, where we feel politically, socially, economically. So it makes it hard to even find a community. But I think one of the cool things that I had when I moved over to Tennessee for the first time was that Larry, the guy that we called into the show, he started like this really good community of like a lot of different interests of, or basically atheists that all have a lot of different interests and backgrounds. And it's nice to have, you know, these sense of communities of friends, not so much because we're all atheists, but because we all kind of get along. And the fact that we just all don't believe in a God seems to be incidental to the fact that, you know, we are here to like support each other in terms of like, skeptical, critical, free thinking, and a lot of progressive issues with regard to, you know, people having free access to rights that everyone should be able to enjoy.
Sure, it's like getting together with like-minded individuals. We only really agree on one thing, which is there isn't, with probably no God, and we don't believe in any. But we can also let ourselves hang out, basically, as it were. We don't have to worry about making a cross-reference to God or talking about a particular religion. We can be open and honest with each other on the topic of religion, where when we're with a general segment of society, you know, we have to be guarded and so that we don't step on any theological toes, as it were.
And it's so easy to step on those toes to get everywhere, don't they? Speaking of how to carefully get around people's toes, Gannon, you're a street epistemologist. What is that all about?
I'm rather new to it, and actually one of the things that I wanted to do with my specific YouTube channel is kind of showcase what it's like having never really done it before. Like, my very first time doing it was actually video number 1, 2, and 3 for me. So I'm basically recording my, I don't know, transformation, if you will, from super novice in training street epistemologist to hopefully get on Anthony's level one day and be as good as good and direct as he is with really getting to the heart of things quickly.
So just adding some context of some of the things Gannon's saying. He recently started a YouTube channel. What's the name of that channel again?
Street Socratics.
Street Socratics. Great logo, by the way. I'm so impressed you came up with that. It's all your own. It's very flashy. I love it. And then he's starting out as a street epistemology practitioner, basically trying to – you're doing a great job already, to be perfectly honest with you. I think you don't need to necessarily, like, compare yourself to, like, Anthony Magnabosco. I think in your own right you'll be able to accomplish your own goals with it and, like, have a very distinct style that can help other people find a good way to fall into the practice and use it in an effective way to help other people think about their beliefs and critically assess how they came to their conclusions based on the methodology that they use. What would you say are some of your goals with street epistemology currently?
The primary goal is really just being comfortable talking to people, like regular old people out in the street, about these heavy subjects that really have just a huge amount problematic and conflicting, you know, like very polarizing attitudes when it comes to either this is what I believe and don't you dare question it, or
sure.
I want to be on the complete opposite side of that. I basically want to question everything and do it in public and in a very open manner and encourage others to do the same. So that's like the primary goal, and the secondary goal is really to capture crazy people saying crazy stuff on camera and put it on the internet.
Yeah.
That's also really awesome.
Well, explain. Why would it be a good idea to question everything?
Because it leads you to, like, the comparison I have is, you guys ever read The Jungle Book and Rikki Tikki Tavi?
I remember Rikki Tikki Tavi. Yeah.
So the story itself is about a mongoose who kills snakes for this family, and there's a famous song by Donovan, who's a British songwriter from the 60s and 70s, and he wrote a song called Rikki Tikki Tavi, and it's basically the comparison he draws is that he, at one point in his life, thought that there was institutions that could do the killing of the snakes, as it were, for you, which is like the school and the church and the government. Like, but then you grow up and you realize that you have to kill your own snakes. And that's sort of the ethos that I follow in that sense. I want to do my own work. I want to put my own effort into my life, because it's ultimately the only person living my life is me.
Right.
And that's who my life's going to matter to the most.
Well,
myself,
and if you don't, then you find yourself accepting what other people tell you, which is a form of authoritarianism. If you don't do your own research, then you're liable to be gullible for anything that people tell you. And when you accept it as truth just because they say it, especially a person in authority.
So if you don't mind me asking, so did you ever believe in a God, and did you go through a transformation period between being a theist into an atheist, or were you always atheist? What's your background, basically?
Yeah, I've given it thought before, and I can't even really say whether or not I ever believed in like any kind of higher power. There was always just the presumption that, you know, other people believe it, and I spent the first, you know, 5 or 6 years of my life going to church every Sunday, but I was so little and I had no idea what was going on, really. It was really just like an extra day of school for me at some point. But
isn't that true?
Yeah,
Sunday, wake up again. You're like, what? It's
Thursday. After my parents divorced around when I was like six, so I basically wasn't forced to go to church anymore, and I kind of didn't really pay any further attention to it after that. And the people in my life weren't really that religious. And so it was a very neutral, sort of a secular life, but just steeped in, I guess, cultural Christianity, which is something that I've come to realize is a pretty good descriptor of like Western thinking in quotes, I guess.
Mm.
So cultural Christianity is like the idea that, you know, the individual is sovereign, and that, you know, turn the other cheek is a great way to live.
Sure.
Not for every single situation, but, you know, things like the memes that come out of Christianity,
sure.
I guess.
Right.
Like,
do unto others as others would do unto you. Celebrate Christmas, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, Christmas especially, because there was almost never a religious overtone to Christmas. It was always to do with Santa or,
right.
You know, Christmas trees. It never came to Jesus or any of the stories that, like, I heard the gift of the Magi when I was like 16 for the first time. So
really?
That
wow.
was like way after I suppose I should have, right? So it's always been sort of a neutral secular way of life for me. And that's actually part of why I'm here, I think.
I guess what motivated you to, or I'm doubt if I, do you got any questions?
Oh no, I'm pretty much, was raised secular. We didn't talk about church much. We didn't go to church. My mother was religious, but she wanted to do basically was just pray over meals and tell me that Jesus was good and make sure I believe. But we didn't go to church because she didn't like the people in church. She called them hypocrites because they didn't practice what Jesus preached. But that was about it.
Wow.
My dad wasn't very religious. He came through World War II. I'm 68.
Whoa!
So he was in World War II. He was captured by the Germans, machine gunned and captured, and kept in a prisoner of war camp for 9 months. So he, you know, I can imagine that his view of religion and God was skewed quite a bit by his experience. But he would still refer to the old man upstairs when he tells us to be good, you know, that type of thing. You know, old man upstairs watching. But he would never go any farther than that in dogma or in Christianity. So I was raised fairly secular with a great respect for science, scientific method.
That's really interesting. So I feel like I'm the only one that had like a pretty strong religious upbringing background, which is pretty common among black families. So I was raised particularly like in the church. So as a result of my losing my father, with only my mom like being able to be able to raise me, we needed a community to like watch me and take care of me to like help her. So we were really well integrated in a lot of churches that we had moved to. We moved to a new city and immediately looked for a church to integrate ourselves with. And so like I had that all the way. So I've had like deeply religious, you know, thoughts and principles, I guess you could call them, all the way until like college. So like it wasn't until like grad school that I started like having the functional critical thought necessary to like start to dissect my religious beliefs and get to the point where I was comfortable saying that I'm not religious anymore. I'm walking away from that. And it wasn't until I saw like things like the atheist experience and like was able to live in Sweden for a while and in a secular environment, entirely secular environment, that I was like, okay, I'm comfortable coming out. And then when I moved to Tennessee, that's when I was like, oh, there's other atheist groups, because I'm still very uncomfortable with the A word, but I want to hang out with other atheists. And that's when, like, the whole thing came full circle for me. And then I just needed a way to communicate with other people, and that's where street epistemology comes in. And that's, I guess, the subject of the show. We're close to the bottom of the hour, but you mind if I just ask Gannon one last question?
Sure, go for it.
Hey, Gannon. What's some of the things that inspired you from the point that you were at where you just didn't have like this, you know, religious upbringing to the point where you're now actually talking to people about the religious perspective? Like, maybe, can you get that out?
Yeah, so this was actually only just a few years ago that I stumbled upon the atheist experience. I'm not even sure, I can't quite remember how I found the show, but then I just started watching show after show. And then I saw one day Anthony was on the show. Anthony Magnabosco was on Atheist Experience, and that led me directly to his channel and Street Epistemology. I was, from the very first video, I was enthralled. I was like, my jaw dropped to the floor when I the guy that he was talking to, I don't even remember which one it was, but he stand there for like 10 seconds and he had no response to Anthony's question. I was just like, yeah, that's what I want to talk to people. And that's what I want, man. I want to have those conversations and have that I don't know moment. That's really the best part of street epistemology, I think.
Yeah. Getting that when you actually can see the gears turning and they're actually thinking sometimes for the first time in their lives about these things. We have a saying in the group, you know, science has questions that may never be answered, but religion has answers that may never be questioned. And we want them to ask them. And it's important that they do ask them and think about them. And you make them do that during street epistemology. It's one of the fortes of street epistemology is asking questions back to them and getting them to think about the answers they're going to give.
And Gannon, you do a really good job with it too. I'd like to go into some of the examples. Larry, how do you feel about one last quick point? The quick point is we're talking with Gannon, Calamity Gannon, the Wombat, and I. We're all, both of us, Gannon and I, are what we call like practitioners of a method called street epistemology. He just recently released a website that has a list of all of the street epistemologists uploading videos to the internet.
Oh, really? What's that?
Gannon, you want to plug the website?
Oh, sure. You're talking about the playlist, right? SE-playlist.com.
And if you go there, you can see a list of all the most updated or most recent videos that are uploaded by people all around the world, talking to people and having those I don't know moments. And what's cool is you'll see a lot of different styles of SE in use. And I think it's cool to see a lot of different people taking their unique spins and experimenting with the method to try to get a more optimized way to get different kinds of people to think about the beliefs.
Okay, very good. That's a YouTube channel, isn't it?
I mean, it's the website.
You created it in the YouTube environment?
Yeah, the URL is a redirect to the playlist link, which is a fairly long, complex series.
Yeah. I'm looking at it. It looks very good.
Yeah. It costs Gannon so much money to get that website, so please check it out. So much.
Okay.
Life saving, man.
Yeah. By the way, we're halfway down the hour. We really need to do a station identification, so we'll go into that. We won't play a song. I played a song a little bit earlier, and we have guests, so we're going to just keep on trucking. But we do need to do this Radio Midway bumper, and we'll be right back. Hold on.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937.
That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
See, that wasn't too painful. Go on with your questions there, Wombat. I'm interested in hearing the rest of the story here, as I say.
Okay, so if you look at Gannon's setup, it's actually one of the most elaborate FE setups I've seen. It's inspired me, too. You want to talk about, like, some of the challenges that you've had when you were like, okay, I want to do this, to actually setting up and doing it for the first day?
Oh, man. So, yeah, I actually detailed my experience there on the Facebook Street Epistemology group, which is a great resource if you're interested. So essentially, I got all of the equipment. I kind of rushed the goalpost by purchasing all the stuff I wanted and getting it real nice and having just close to zero experience in video editing and doing the setup and all the things that are involved with the project. I just had
zero experience.
And
yeah.
So, I'll get that later.
So I grabbed.
I can do camera.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I mean, how hard could it be? I thought, and here I am. So, my first day, I grabbed all my gear. I went out to a local park, thinking that would be a great spot for me to start, just to maybe some light foot traffic. And then I get all my stuff there. Spent, I don't know, half hour, 45 minutes setting up. And just as I sat down in the chair, waiting to flag people down, one of the park, I guess rangers or officers, whatever, comes by and asks me what I'm doing. And I described it, and I gave him my card, and he basically went back and talked to, I guess, his superior, and they came back with, you can't record here because you're on park grounds or something.
Really?
So, wow. I thought, well, all right, that's how it's going to be for some or all of my experience. We'll see. I don't know. So I packed up, and then I went to a different park. And before setting up and making that mistake twice, I asked the person that sort of ran the park area, and they said, you can't do that without approval from my superior. And I figured, okay, I emailed the guy, and that actually, I never got a response on that. So I was thinking of giving up that day and maybe shooting for another day. I went to a third spot that was really public and had quite a bit of foot traffic in the Orange Circle area. In Orange, California, and I set up there, and I got three great interviews out of that day, and I felt pretty awesome after that.
Nice.
And no one came and talked to me and told me to pack up, so that was a great feeling.
Very good.
And then since then, I've only actually done one other session since then, and I chose a Pasadena art festival, which had some decent foot traffic that day as well, and I got like six more. So I've gotten quite a few talks over just two sessions, and I actually have like two more interviews to edit and upload. So,
well, very good. You're a brave
each
man.
All nine of them. So the most interesting thing I thought was that all nine of them were on completely different topics. Like each person has chosen something totally different. Like I kind of expected like at least three or four, not even Christians, just religious people, but. Only one of them was actually religious. It was a Christian man.
Again, we're all chomping at the bit. What are some of these topics? Why don't we walk through like some of like the earlier topics that you got into before you get to the God topic? Just to illustrate that like street epistemology isn't just a method strictly for atheists to use against Christians as like a Jedi mind trick to like turn them into like other atheists. It can actually be utilized for on any topic and is only focused on getting people to critically think. And gauge their confidence. So, like, what are some of the topics that you went through?
So the second one happened to be karma and sort of the accountability system of some sort of supernatural type thing. I really didn't flesh out all of those details, but that seemed to be it, like some supernatural component like karma involved there. The third guy was sort of like he was a minimalist and he was trying to be a writer. So he had this idea like a Walden style, life decision where he would live deliberately in the woods kind of thing, semi close to civilization. And then on my second session, one of the people was, like the first guy was talking about like the power of now and like positive thinking. So it was like, it wasn't spiritual, but it was like in the direction of, have you given this much critical thought,
sure,
sort of thing.
Sure. How did you feel when you got your, I was wondering how you felt when you first got your religious talk. Because when I first got mine, it was like every synapse in my body like firing. I'm like, calm down. I'm excited. I can finally ask all those questions I saw on YouTube. I know the answers for everything. So like, how did you feel when you first got your first religious talk? And I'm like, how did you approach it? Like, what happened?
It was actually, I had the same feeling, and it actually happened to be my very first one. So I was like, I was trying my best to fight the urge to just throw out all the counter apologetics that I've picked up on since watching AXP and other sources there. So it was definitely, I kept
that would be my problem. I always go for this.
I kept that sort of in my back pocket thinking, okay, if he wants something like that, if he wants my actual opinion on it, I can throw that out there, but okay, I'd rather just ask questions. And that I stuck to questions, being like, I'm the host of an interview talk show and you're going to answer questions for me, that kind of thing. So I figured that was the best approach and it worked out and I'm glad I did it. But the weird thing at the end of that one was he asked me if I was a Scientologist, and I was like, what did I do to make you think that? I want to know.
So I found that the more nervous or excited I get about like an approaching conversation that could be like really stressful for me, the more inclined I am to try to make it as jovial and casual as possible. So if someone brings up like the God topic, now I've noticed it's kind of like a good thing that I try to do. So like when people bring up a God topic for me, instead of like trying to make it like an interview, I try to make it like a friendly conversation. I'll joke around, I'll throw in like tangents, and maybe we'll like uncover layers question at a time. But if we don't, that's totally fine. But we'll circle back on the topic as it feels like it's necessary and just keeps both people relaxed. How do you feel about the social dynamic of talking to someone about like their religious beliefs? How do you express questions to them while keeping them not being defensive and keeping the conversation in an overall light tone? Like I've noticed that face to face is kind of hard. What's some strategies that you would recommend?
So in that direction, like one thing that I've kept in mind, which is I had an experience maybe 6 or 8 months before I started doing SE, where I had an interaction with a coworker who happened to be a Christian girl, and she went every Sunday to the local church, and I had talked to her a couple of times about it, but then we had a really lengthy discussion and I got pretty mad. I was going through a bit of an angry atheist phase, and I luckily had a kind of a short phase of doing that, but I got heated and I let my cool off and I yelled a little bit too much in my opinion. And like she basically shut down and didn't respond and was basically like, you're a jerk. I'm not talking to you about this stuff anymore. Right. So that I kept it after that event. And ever since, like I've had that in the back of my mind to never go down that road again, because I found that it's just not helpful. Like that it's like the most classic example in my life of the backfire effect that I've experienced.
What do you do
essentially
if they take offense anyway and start going down that road by itself? How do you keep from following them down there? Do you have any particular game plan or just mindset that you rely on?
What Ty said, which is to bring it back to something more cheerful or light, or you know, inject comedy as best you can into it, which I'm actually I'm already naturally a little bit good at, so I have the ability to bring it back to a lighter tone, just you know, in a natural conversational way.
They say you're going to hell, and you say, "How about them vols?" Something like that.
Yeah, in fact, I'm going to use that.
I have to watch some of your Street of Build epistemology videos. Maybe I'll get some tip from that. But.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Larry. I'm totally going to link you to his stuff later on.
Yeah, cool.
But, Gannon, I'm wondering, so you told me some of the things that you knew that you wanted to stay away from, especially with that the competition you had with your coworker. What were some things that you would suggest, maybe even just generally for, like, people listening, that you would recommend that people actually do actively in order to keep people a little bit more placid when talking to them about a deeply held belief? So I think that's, like, one of the most scariest things for most people starting into questioning and publicly questioning.
Yeah, I think so. The thing, like I said, the things to avoid, but yeah, things to do proactively is really address the why and the how, because the why sort of is a foundational. It's less foundational than the how, but the how is almost. It's so rarely thought about by people, which I've realized doing street epistemology, is that they don't really give it much thought as to how they arrived there. It's so often like, yeah, I grew up in it and that's why I'm here, and they don't even give it a second thought almost. But the why can be just as powerful if you want to just know, like, their state of mind as to, you know, the motivation for them actively believing in something that they haven't been able to demonstrate. Like, clearly they can't. It's so often the case that they say, you know, they express something that they believe, maybe having never thought of it, and they just heard someone else say it. And then you can ask, like, why they believe that. And just that act of asking why they believe that can get them to think about it. And maybe they'll even be, if they're the honest type of person, they'll say something like, oh, I heard somebody else say that, and I thought it was clever or interesting, so I thought I would say it too and see how it goes or something. Yeah. It's really rare, I would say, to hear someone express something like that.
Yeah.
But,
the most honest answer I ever got to that question, like I said, well, you know, first of all, he was saying, I'm a Christian. I said, well, why are you a Christian? And he paused for about 5 seconds, and he said, I was raised Christian. My parents were Christian. I said, yeah, well, you know, if you were born in Iraq, would you be a Christian? And he thought about it and said, probably not. So, I mean, if nothing else was said, at least he got that point. He brought that point home so he could think about it later to see just how fragile that is.
It is interesting to see how people get to their conclusions. And I find that, like, instead of challenging them personally or challenging the conclusion that they reach, asking them questions like how and why is a good way to just target the methodology that they use to get to their conclusion. And by targeting that, you're addressing an area that has a lot less ego invested, because people tend to invest so much so much of their own cells into the conclusions that when you question or challenge the conclusion, it feels as if you had challenged them personally. And they'll respond to that as if, when you challenge their conclusions, they'll respond to it as if you attack them personally. So, like, these why and how questions are good ways to understand how they got to the methodology. And working on that with them can help them get even a better perspective on how they arrived at the conclusions they have, without landing on any of the mines that basically could be a pratfall. Or, I'm sorry, you don't want to, like, trigger any unnecessary defensive mechanisms as you're trying to explain how they got to, by trying to examine how they got into the conclusion. Gannon, what do you think about common mistakes that people might have made in the situation that you're in, and maybe, like, ways that we could avoid it? Like, was there any, like, immediate learning lessons that you made when you're doing your talk that you know now that, man, I'm glad that I know that I won't do that again? Any kind of, like, tips in that regard?
Yeah, like, having repeated back, like, between the first and second sessions that I've done, in fact, I feel like there's been a big improvement, because one of the things that I failed to do on the first set was really repeat back what they said to get the best case of what they said, you know, clearly defined, like, in terms that I understand. And by repeating it back in my own language and they agree or disagree and tell me why they disagree, that's so helpful for understanding their position, because then I'm not fighting some straw man of it. I'm fighting the steel man, which is I arguably want that the steel man as a challenge to a position that I disagree with, because that's ultimately going to be benefiting my own position if I am correct in my own way of thinking.
Okay.
So I always want the steel man, because that's going to give me the best steel man of my own position.
Right. It also sets a good example that you're, you know, generally trying to understand what they think, and you're doing it in an honest and fair way, which means that the answers and responses you get will also be honest and fair as well. I think it's always good to set that example.
Some of our audience may not know what a straw man is or a steel man, would you just take a minute to describe those?
Oh, sure. So straw man, as far as like a logical fallacy goes, specifically when you attack a person's position on something that they make a statement or a claim and you interpret it differently or perhaps purposely incorrectly so that you can make a mockery out of it, or just in order to humiliate them or make them feel like they're wrong, but
like intentionally misrepresenting their position, so that you could then attack that misrepresentation instead of the true representation.
Exactly, and so like in a large audience style debate, it leads to, you know, the audience being sort of confused about who's right, because mm-hmm. they hear the straw man interpretation and they hear something that's actually incorrect. When it's two people talking to each other, it only leads to disaster in my mind. Mm-hmm. Because
and it's a dishonest.
You're not getting the best. You're not. Yeah, absolutely dishonest. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like an example of that would be like a creationist saying, evolutionists think that we came from rock to a monkey to man, and you know that's stupid. But he's misrepresenting what we believe about evolution in order to criticize that belief and not the real belief.
Oh, sure. I get that all the time. You've heard people say, hey, everything in the world is, you know, creation, or else it's made by random chance.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. like, those aren't even the two options. Right. Not only that, those aren't even mutually exclusive.
Or by accident. Yeah, I've heard that a lot.
And, yeah, no scientist is saying that it's made by random chance, as far as I'm aware. Mm-hmm. So people tend to color arguments in a straw man point of view.
Yeah.
And even to have an honest discussion about it, you have to like really try to break that down.
Right.
You know, talking to people is a really complicated issue. But instead of like addressing, you know, point, counterpoint, it's an amazing way. SC is like really well designed in that you're just asking about the methodology that they use to reach their conclusion. And if those methodologies are reliable, and if they aren't reliable, that's something that they can figure out along with you. And if they're honest about their approach and if they're honest about their intentions, they will either find a better method to hold on to those conclusions, or if they can't find a better method at all, they will no longer be connected to those conclusions and will be left as a person who can look for something better,
right.
You know, like a better conclusion. And that's the ultimate goal of street epistemology. Like, bring people from bad methodologies that lead to bad conclusions and helping them get better methodologies that lead to more reasonable conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Sounds right.
Dennis, let me ask you something. Do you have a funny experience that's happened to you in street epistemology so far? Have you had like a favorite conversation or like, for example, if you know about Ben Coates, who I'd love, Ben Diesel, who is a South African street epistemology practitioner. I'd love to have him on the show too. He recently just had a talk with a guy that ended with both of them getting in the same car and driving to get lunch. Like, it just became like almost best friends at the end of the conversation. Have you had anything like random or awesome happen to you in any of these talks?
Nothing quite like that though. That's a great story though. In fact, I'd be super open to that happening, to me, and I kind of wish that it would.
Me too.
Haven't happened yet. But that's actually one of the goals, I guess, like a tertiary goal of SE for me is really like talking to people and getting on friendly terms with them, and then I hand them a card and maybe they'll call me back and we'll hang out, and maybe like not recording the second talk or anything, but we'll talk about things that are on their mind, or, you know, what have you. It's really like expanding my social network of people that are interested in interesting things. It's like maybe a different way to put it, but it's like, it doesn't have to be about like God or religion or belief even, but just expanding my talk circle of people that like talking about, like they were interested enough to come up to me in the first place. So the chances of them wanting to talk further is pretty great, I think, which is the whole reason for the card for me. But anyway, the to like answer the question, I think is like, sorry, repeat the question for me.
If you can, or at least, you know, like one of the most interesting things that's happened to you, setting up or talking to people and like coming back home. You gave us some, like, you know, the man getting in your way. Well, how about something positive? Tell me something cool that happened to you that you thought was generally interesting, that like, even was outside of the scope of the SC conversation you're having. It would be nice to know something like that.
Yeah, I mean, other than just people coming up to me and being generally interested in what I'm doing, a couple of people have come up to me and asked me a few things about just the general, like what I'm doing with YouTube and that kind of thing. Like, because they had the idea of doing the same thing. What's that?
Okay. Got her mind doing some stuff in the background. But we're all listening to you. So, about this? Oh, go for it. Go for it, please.
I was just going to say, like people coming up to me and saying, I would really love to do this myself. Like,
you
have any pointers? And I give them the card, and then I say specifically, like, if you want to learn more about the method, go to streetepistemology.com, because that's the best source of info at a general level for it.
That sounded very Scientology. Right there. If you'd like to find out more about our method, please contact the speech. So I would say this. What are some tools of the trade that you think is necessary in your setup? I noticed that you have a setup that's stationary. That's basically like a table, and you have the microphones there. And one of the coolest, you know, innovations that we've seen in this street epistemology endeavor, you've got a bag of chips that you give out, free food, water bottles.
I got chips. I got chips, yeah. I got chocolate, I got canned sodas and water. I'm all set up, man.
Yeah. I remember your first video, you had like a Diet Coke on the table the entire time. I was like, what, is he sponsored or something? What's going on here? So what are some of the things that you use that you think is absolutely crucial if anyone wanted to get started in actually recording their street epistemology videos as well?
So I definitely took the middle to high end route with the stuff I purchased and the amount of money I spent. So the absolute cheapest thing, if you wanted to just go out there, I think Placing Pebbles is another YouTube guy that's, done everything basically on the absolute low end of the cost spectrum. And he had his iPhone, I think, is all he's using, and a whiteboard and marker. So that's, He went for the bare necessities, and I mean his content's still pretty good. So I think that's all you basically need. And most people have smartphones these days with good decent cameras on them. The only other thing would be maybe a Y splitter for a microphone and lavalier mics.
Ooh,
to maybe
nice.
Upgrade the sound a little bit. Just if you want to still go bare bones, that is a great addition for the audio quality, which matters so much when we're talking about like conversations with people. So
it's true. I think one of the first things I purchased and picked up after thinking that I could do this with just an iPhone or like my Android phone with a lavalier microphone from Amazon, it cost me like $7. And it was just with that and a clipboard, I would go to churches and I'd ask if it was okay if I did some interviews there. I'd ask the first, they'd say cool. And I'd just go around and talk to some of the people there, and I had some really good audio. And it was just a nice way to, like, slowly build the confidence in talking to people about the religion. Some of the people already assumed that I was, like, Christian, but, like, through the end of the conversation, it was like, okay, maybe I should get in my car pretty soon. But there's a UU church, a United Universalist church that I go to a couple of times. And what's great about that is that many different faiths go to that church. So it's a good pool to like ask about, like make inquiries about people's religion. But I did eventually go to the table setup. I'm wondering, you said like the microphone's really useful. You don't use a lavalier microphone right now. Like what kind of microphones do you use? What's some of the more fancy equipment do you have as part of your setup?
So I use a Tascam DR40 with dual XLR inputs, and I use, I forgot the brand, but they're basic, they're pretty basic shotgun mics for that are great for interviews, especially outdoor interviews. Mm. So, and I basically use the same cameras that you do, Ty.
Oh, really? Cool, awesome.
E-Lite. Yeah, those are great little cameras for
the
price, man.
Let me tell you something. So a lot of people think that when they record, or that here's the bottom line. You don't need to have cameras or a stereo system or a mic to do street epistemology. It's just that if you want to document it so that you can, like, put it up on YouTube, it's good to have quality instruments in order to do that. And it helps just portray it in a attractive way that more people would appreciate to see. And so you could get a GoPro. I think some of our, you know, guys do use GoPros, and they're good. They're a wonderful instrument. But if you want something that does the exact same thing for a fifth of the cost, you can get something called a E-Lite, which is for stationary build, like on a tabletop, a fantastic little camera. It's really cheap. On Amazon, they'll go as low as $80 to, like, even $70 each. Like I said, it's a little bit still of a pricey thing, but it's one of the best cameras that you can get in terms of quality and bang for your buck. And I think overall, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. Let's see. When you are moving all of your stuff over to the park areas, how do you do that? Like, you have a lot of stuff that you need to move at once, right?
Yeah, I actually got, like, a big-sized like wagon that's a collapsible wagon with like tires on it for that purpose, because I wanted something that can fit my table, my chairs, my canopy, my camera setup, like all the stuff
in
one bin. So yeah, I went for broke and got this big giant collapsible thing. And like I didn't quite measure everything, and then luckily all fit in the car, which was pretty great. So I wasn't out of luck there.
Sounds like you need a partner to help
set
all that stuff up.
Yeah,
I actually learned that I could do it myself. It just takes a little bit extra time for the canopy, which is the most tricky part of doing it on my own. But I was able to do it, so I've been just going out on my own, which has been great.
You know what? And I think what's cool is that, exactly as you said, anyone can go out on their own and do this. And like I said, you don't even need a camera. You don't even need a sophisticated setup. And you don't even have to, like, consider making, like, how do I put it? Like going out and doing it. Like, street epistemology could work in any sort of environment. Conversation with your friends, phone call. If you want to text, you can do it by email. There's a lot of different avenues to have, like, you know, thought-provoking conversations with people. And what we'd really just recommend is that people check out se-playlist.com to see all of us, you know, doing our best efforts and trying to, like, optimize this method, what we can get people think about.
About 30 seconds, final words.
So, Gannon, basically, do you have any parting words for our guest about street epistemology?
I highly recommend that everyone get on streetepistemology.com and learn the method and just start having talks, man. Just start talking to people, and you'll develop your own style really quickly, and it'll cater to your expertise there. So it's definitely what I recommend.
Okay, real good. Wombat, final words?
Exactly what Gannon said. Go on streetepistemology.com and get educated and start talking to people about anything.
Okay, sounds real good. Remember, this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're here every week at 7 o'clock on Wednesday, WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM. See you next week at 7 o'clock. Remember, everybody's going to somebody else's hell. Don't sweat it. We'll see you next week. Bye. Say bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Let it go, let it go, God. listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.